Did you know that we're starting a convention? That's right, from September 23rd through 25th, 2016, we are running the Nerd and Tie Expo in Eau Claire, Wisconsin, at the Plaza Hotel and Suites. Pre-registration's only $30. You can do that right now if you just go to expo.nerdandtie.com and be awesome, be amazing, join us, or else you won't be there with us and you'll be sad, and being sad is never fun unless you're weird. And that do you. Whatever.
On this Fortnite's episode of Nerd and Tie, Deadpool is breaking records left and right. As a result, Fox is considering an R rating for Wolverine 3. The Battlestar Galactica reboot is still happening. The new Star Trek series has a showrunner, and we discuss some stuff going on in the con scene. All this and more, along with the mailbag, on Nerd and Tie.
Yay!
Huzzah!
We done it. We did it.
That's amazing.
How are you guys doing this Fortnite?
Tired, exhausted, not dead. So, I mean, that's something.
It's been a kind of crummy week, honestly.
Introductions, right? And welcome to your fortnightly podcast, Nerd and Tie, the only podcast on the internet with a dress code. I am one of your hosts, Professor Fursters, and along with me is the impeccably well-timed Nick Azumi.
Unstoppable in 3 out of 50 states.
And the fortuitously well-placed Trey Dorn.
I'm in the middle, because that was the spot that took the least processing power to put me.
Yes.
That's a reference only the video people have a hope of understanding, yet none of them actually do.
Yeah, right. Well, they'll get it now that you kind of explained it. But no, everybody, welcome to this Fortnite's episode. We got a lot to talk about, a lot to do. We're all Trey's dancing already. Trey's so excited to talk about things that he's dancing. But I don't know. What do you say we get right into it, guys?
Well, I did buy a water filter today. So, I mean,
that's why you're dancing.
We could talk about that instead.
Or we could talk about the fact that one of the most anticipated superhero movies of all time is breaking every single record right now.
Oh, boy.
Of course, Deadpool opened last weekend. If you're listening to this tonight on February 21st, it opened the weekend of February 12th, Valentine's Day weekend, officially a 4-day weekend in box office terms. But it is performing beyond anybody's wildest expectations.
Kind of amazing.
Just to run down the list of the records that it's broken, it is the biggest R-rated opening weekend ever. It hit $132.7 million from Friday to Saturday. It is the biggest opening ever for a first-time director. What else? It is the biggest R-rated superhero movie opening ever. It is the biggest opening for a 4-day weekend movie ever. It is the biggest movie ever in Russia. It is open bigger than any movie, even more so than Star Wars: The Force Awakens in Russia.
In its opening weekend, it made more money domestically than The Wolverine made in its entire run domestically.
I mean, this is incredible right now. And in all this on a $58 million budget, it has already eclipsed pretty darn close to $300 million. Numbers are still going to be kind of coming in tomorrow based on what it did this weekend. It's already the number one movie this weekend, second weekend, and it's still the number one movie. But this movie is a juggernaut.
To be fair, as someone who used to be a really hardcore Deadpool reader, they actually got the character down pat. Like, they did not miss a beat with how he acts or behaves.
Well, and I think that's why I think it's so popular. I mean, we saw Wolverine Origins, and they did absolutely no justice to any of the characters. And I think that's kind of what tanked that movie, is that people said, "Oh, this isn't anything like the characters." But immediately, like, every single thing I've heard, and I'm seeing Deadpool in about an hour or so.
Fur has not actually seen Deadpool.
I have not seen it yet. But literally everybody that has come out of that theater, come out of that movie, from the sounds of it, has said, that is everything I wanted a Deadpool movie to be and more.
Yeah, and so we're not going to spoil the movie at all, really, this episode, because obviously Fur hasn't seen it, and we're not dicks to people we know. everyone else, who cares? But we know Fur. So, it's doing well because it was true to the source material, but also, frankly, it's a hugely popular character. The fact that it took so many hurdles, the fact that it was so hard to get this movie made is actually kind of astounding when you consider how popular Deadpool the character is.
He's way more popular than any character created by Rob Liefeld has any right to be, frankly.
Well, to be fair,
Fabian Nicieza deserves all the credit.
To be fair, all the parts that Rob Liefeld did were just like tracing Deathstroke.
Did you know that in the first 4 years of Deadpool's appearances in comics, he didn't have feet because Rob Liefeld was drawing him?
Drew him from like the ankles up?
Yeah, always drew him from the ankles up, or there was dust around his legs or whatever. Yeah.
Are you serious? Like, is that an actual thing?
I am 100% honest with you.
Like,
right now.
I know that there's the joke that Rob Liefeld like avoided drawing feet whenever possible, but I didn't realize that like an entire character went without having feet shown for 4 years.
Yeah.
My God. That was shocking. Nuts. It made me hiccup.
But so, I mean,
it gave me the hiccups. It's like it was the reverse of what. Wow.
Now, we already know that it's getting a sequel, and there are already petitions out there to make Cable a massive part of the sequel. In fact, from my understanding, there's a reason for that.
There is.
Yeah.
And it's just – it's incredible to see what if a studio takes a chance because, I mean, like, let's be honest here. If you look at movies like The Avengers, Captain America, and whatnot, you can kind of see how a studio might be a little bit hesitant – to take on an R-rated superhero because you might lose a huge portion of the money of people that are going to be taking their kids. Now, let's not even talk about the fact that, yes, people are still taking their kids to see Deadpool, and why
your
are you doing that?
Don't do that.
If I go, okay, when I walk into the theater in an hour in about 20 minutes, if I see anybody in there with children, I will say I will tell them they are a terrible parent.
I'm kidnapping your child and taking her to go see Deadpool in an hour.
Ophelia is going nowhere near this movie until she's about probably 20 years old. I mean, that's but I mean, so people are still taking their kids to the movie, which if you're listening to this and you haven't seen Deadpool yet and you're thinking, hey, I'm going to take little Timmy or little Tina to go see Deadpool this weekend, do not do that.
Well, you know, I think like a 13-year-old could handle the film. I just wouldn't want to watch that movie with my parents when I was 13.
Yeah, no kidding.
Fur hasn't seen it yet, but I could tell you there's stuff in the, you know, like you can watch something violent with your parents and not be weird, but there's other stuff that at no age do you ever want to be sitting next to your parents while it's on screen.
Well it's,
and
it's like,
there's plenty of it in Deadpool.
Well, it's like the old saying, like a sex scene in a movie might only be like 2 minutes long, but if you're watching it with your parents, it immediately becomes 2 hours long.
yeah, so, you know.
Side note, that might be another reason why this movie did so well. Not to spoil too much, but it really is one of the most positive depictions of a sex-positive relationship I've ever seen in a movie. I'm not even saying that jokingly. I mean that completely sincerely.
I'm just saying.
The relationship in this movie is what keeps it together.
But parents, don't take your kids to see Deadpool just because even if you think they're mature enough for it, I think it's abuse to your children to make your kid look at Ryan Reynolds' naked ass at the same time while their mom is sitting next to them.
Do not take children to this movie at all.
Or unless you feel like explaining what pegging is. I think I'd have to explain to my mom what pegging is. So
right.
I definitely would never want to. Oh, my God.
But, I mean, this movie is approaching $500 million. So it's safe to say that the risk that Fox took on putting out an R-rated. Also, I should mention, it's the biggest opening ever for an X-Men-related movie.
Yeah, no, like I said, it made more money in domestically. Obviously, it's just domestic numbers because the Wolverine did well internationally. It made more money in its opening weekend than the Wolverine made in its entire domestic run.
Well, I think, honestly, like looking ahead, I could honestly see this probably beating Apocalypse here, which comes out in a couple
of months.
I
don't know. I think Apocalypse has got a summer movie bonus, which always, like, the timing is very important. The fact that I think that now, will Apocalypse be more profitable per dollar that they put into it? No, definitely not. Deadpool being only $58 million to make, and then making this much money makes it a much better business move for a film. But Apocalypse, even though like it's got, what, a $200 million budget? Like, I'm actually just guessing. I have no idea. What is X-Men?
It's probably, it's got to be somewhere up there.
It's a lot.
It's a lot of money.
Pull it up. Just a second.
I mean, Oscar Isaacs is playing the bad guy.
Oh, I stand. I do quickly stand corrected. At least his feet did not appear in the comic proper. His feet do appear on the cover of the first New Mutants issue he was
in.
Yeah,
but he didn't draw that. I don't think the budget numbers are posted yet.
Probably not. I just thought I'd look to see if I can figure it.
I know if the weird misspelling of budget that I accidentally typed into the cert. Yeah, it's definitely not on the it's not on the Wikipedia page.
Okay. Well, but it's safe to say, though, it probably won't make as much bang for its buck just out of the fact that it's
right
a bigger buck.
Well, I mean, you look at, I mean, right now, if let's say, let's say that Deadpool hits $500 million worldwide box office, which it's probably going to do, and it's probably going to surpass that. That means that it made 10 times its budget. I don't, like, the only kind of movies you see making that kind of return are movies like either The Avengers or like in indie films that get really big and hit it big and make all kinds of money after they get released nationally.
Well,
so,
you know, oh, sorry, go ahead.
On a successful level, I don't think you're going to see another superhero movie have this kind of pullback from the box office.
You know, on a cool side note related to that, the production staff for Deadpool have said for the sequel, they, even with how well they're doing, they don't want to do a drastic budget increase.
Yeah.
They still want to keep it small scale, which is, well, honestly pretty awesome.
Well, and that's also part of what makes Deadpool such a great film is that it's really basic stakes. You know what I mean? It's when we're used to watching movies that even Guardians of the Galaxy, I think, is a good analog to Deadpool, where people want something, a lighter superhero movie. Because even though Deadpool is very violent and R, it's still a thematically, you know, funnier movie, I guess.
Yeah.
Even though it is, you know, still dark to a degree. We saw that with Guardians, but even with Guardians of the Galaxy, the stakes were still like the galaxy, you know, with the Infinity Stone. They're worried about like whole planets getting wiped out. Deadpool scale is just Deadpool is going after, you know, this one person. His whole story is based around that.
Yeah, he's just pissed off with one guy, really.
Yeah, and all what he has to go through to, you know, deal with that one situation. But it's still like, it's the world's not at stake. If Deadpool fails, the stakes are, well, I guess Deadpool didn't get what he wanted.
Pretty much, yeah. It's which also is also true to the comics, because usually that's what Deadpool's problems are. They're rarely the world is at danger. It's usually more Deadpool's dignity or his pocketbook are at danger.
But so the amazing things about this movie is not just that it's the most, you know, we finally have a screen accurate depiction of Wade Wilson. By the way, I finally watched the Deadpool fight scene from X-Men Origins.
Oh, it's so bad.
Oh God, you poor thing.
And
I'll
oh
be
my
honest,
God, I was like, this is real. I've seen fan films with better production values. But,
I'll be honest, I did see that movie in theaters 3 times because it was at the budget, no, Claire, and I'll be, you know, $2.50 to see Liev Schreiber and Hugh Jackman beat the crap out of each other is $2.50 well spent. I mean, that's...
But besides, like, the most comics-accurate depiction of Deadpool, I want to say I love this movie's Best Most Comics Accurate Depiction of Colossus on Film.
Yeah.
Where we finally got a Colossus who looks and acts and like Colossus.
Just in general, the X-Men costumes were better than they have been in any of the X-Men movies.
And I'd
they actually looked like X-Men costumes.
And I'd also like to thank this movie for its least accurate depiction possible of Negasonic Teenage Warhead.
This is true.
A character who, spoilers, in the comics, died like decades ago, and most of her appearances were actually a like mental projection split personality from Emma Frost. And in the comics, she's like a goth telepath who died in Genosha years ago. So, yeah.
But she was so much... This version of her was so much fun, I don't even care.
Oh, no, no. She's the best... Like, it's... like, Negasonic Teenage Warhead in this is... She's, you know, kind of like the modern equivalent to what goth was to the youth scene, you know, in the 90s. You know, it... But... Like, the whole reason they used her was that she could be a blank slate, because actually Ryan Reynolds is talking about this in several interviews, that that when they were trying to get additional X-Men characters for the movie, they got Colossus, but they kept getting no's on every character they brought up, that they were too big or too important, or they wanted them for this other thing. And so they just, like, as a joke, said Negasonic Teenage Warhead.
And they said yes.
And Fox went, who? So that's the whole, like, the reason that Negasonic, that they just got to do whatever they wanted, because the character's just most famous for being named after a Monster Magnet song, you know?
So, well, of course, with the success of with Deadpool and its most notably its R rating, this has opened the door for other things, hasn't it?
Oh, God. Okay, so just before Deadpool opened, I did a video about this, which I posted on Nerd and Tie, talking about my history.
Go look to it. Go look at it, people. Pause the podcast. Go watch Nick's video right now. We'll wait.
Yeah, it's just a
bad. It's a good prologue for the story.
Because like I said before, I used to be a big Deadpool reader. I still read his books now and then. He's a character I really like, and I think that he works well as an R-rated character. Unfortunately, this is mainstream media we're talking about, especially Hollywood, so when an R-rated superhero movie does well, of course they're going to get the wrong lesson from it, which is what I was worried about back 2 weeks ago when I did that video, that Hollywood was going to think, hey, this superhero movie did well because it was rated R. We should do more R-rated superhero movies. And so... The lovely folks at Fox have seemed to have gotten it into their skulls that, hey, you guys, we should make the next Wolverine movie R-rated.
Well, because it's too late to put that stuff into X-Men Apocalypse.
Probably.
I mean, true, we'd all be okay with an Apocalypse sex scene because it's Oscar Isaacs. And...
I don't know, you guys. Whenever it comes to characters with serious physical, like, who are supposed to look like monsters or whatever, I'm always scared of anyone saying sex scene because there was a Rurouni Kenshin OVA and I didn't ask for that.
Can Apocalypse,
say.
Like, choose which parts of himself to grow?
Go to fanfiction.net. I'm sure the answer
sure.
is there.
Oh, I would.
The answer is yes, by the way.
Yeah, it's, I'm certain.
So, well, I don't know. But, like, Nick, do you think this is really a bad thing, though?
Well, I'm of two minds about this. I am of two minds about this. Because on one hand, the first ultra-violent comic book I ever read when I was a kid was a Wolverine story. It was actually Warren Ellis's four-parter Not Dead Yet, which you can get in trade paperback. It's an awesome story. And in some ways, yeah, Wolverine works great as an R-rated character.
But that's the version of Wolverine I like the least. I've always loved the Wolverine who's, like, mentoring, like, a younger X-Men and, like, Like, we never get, like, the great thing about Wolverine is that, like, historically he's always had these Batman-Robin dynamics with younger characters, whether it be Jubilee or Kitty Pryde or, you know, it's... And that's the Wolverine who I always liked the most.
And I'm with you, Trey, because I was about to get to the... On the other hand, that's the other thing, is that Hugh Jackman's Wolverine has been a PG-13 Wolverine for his entire cinematic run.
Right, and...
I first saw him as Wolverine when I was 12. You know...
Yeah, it's... And you know, I will say the first Bryan Singer X-Men movie brought that dynamic in with the dynamic between Wolverine and Rogue.
Mm-hmm.
Which...
They handled it really well in that movie.
Yeah, but...
And I'm not that keen on the idea of Wolverine, what is probably going to be the last time we have Hugh Jackman as Wolverine, and a good chunk of the people who love Hugh Jackman as Wolverine, i.e., you know, kids, aren't going to be able to go see it.
Yeah.
I think that sucks, frankly.
Honestly, I think Wolverine, and if you've seen the second Wolverine movie, I mean, there, and even seen deleted scenes, that movie could have very easily been R-rated if they wanted it to be. Like, and honestly, like, if you want to release,
there was an unrated director's cut of that. That is,
yeah, and if you want to do that,
yeah, and that movie is largely based off of stuff that happened during this run of X-Men.
Yep, and that's fine if you want to do that, because here's what it is. Wolverine is a cash cow. Mm-hmm. Like, people are going to go see a Wolverine movie as long as it's not Origins. they're gonna go see a movie with Wolverine in it. Why? Because people love Hugh Jackman as Wolverine.
I love Hugh Jackman.
I literally just happen to have like a copy of the trade of the comics that that movie is largely based on.
So,
at my desk.
Frank Miller could kind of write.
Look at the success of Deadpool
most of the issues that those are based on were written by like Chris Claremont.
Okay, well then it's no surprise they're good.
Yeah.
But to look at the success of Deadpool and to immediately say like, oh well, we got to take Wolverine and do this because we can still make money. But I think that's sort of a gut reaction from Hollywood, from Hollywood bigwigs, because yeah, Deadpool made all the money like in the entire world at this point, but. You gotta, I mean, just to make Wolverine R-rated just because of that success, I think you're gonna, you lose a lot of what makes Wolverine good and great, and you're just, Wolverine can be really mean, like, and to see that taken out on screen, and if you're gonna make it R-rating just so you can throw in a lot more blood and a lot more gore, I think they're missing the point of Deadpool.
Well, yeah, that's the whole thing, is it's like a lot of what makes Wolverine great, doesn't need to be ratcheted up in the blood and gore to actually still tell a good story. While Deadpool,
well, hell, there are three perfectly kid-friendly cartoons with Wolverine as a main character, and they didn't need blood or gore to make him compelling in any of those.
Only three?
Well, I'm thinking of the 90s TV show was good. Pride of the X-Men, the initial pilot, was not good.
Okay.
X-Men Evolution is actually decently good. Wolverine and the X-Men was wrongfully canceled, and that X-Men anime is unwatchably terrible.
I love Pride of the X-Men with the predictive Australian Wolverine.
The weirdly prophetic Australian Wolverine. Yes, I do own that tape. I watch it more often than I should, but it still isn't good.
So, honestly, I think they're making a mistake if they're going to make it R-rated. Just do what you did with the second one and make it an unrated director's cut, because then people that want to see all that and want to see that level of Wolverine, they can still see it. It's still available. But don't make it the only option, I think, for people.
I think what the big fear is that what Hollywood's going to take away from this is, let's just make everything R if we can, not should we.
Yeah.
Because the reason why the R rating is important for Deadpool is because that fits with Deadpool. It's
right. Deadpool would not work as PG-13.
Right. You need to make the movie that is most true to the character that it's about. That's why Guardians of the Galaxy worked. That's why Deadpool worked. But if you wouldn't want to make, say, I know we're switching series, you wouldn't want to make it rated R Guardians of the Galaxy.
Or
pointless.
Or you wouldn't want to make a murderous R-rated Superman. Oh, wait. That already happened.
That wasn't R-rated.
Yeah, it should have been.
It'd be like making a Batman movie R-rated, which you could do, but...
Oh, wait, I argue Batman like that straight-to-video killing joke movie that they're doing?
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
I argue that Batman works better as R-rated than...
Than
Wolverine. And
no, I can see that.
I know that, but it's because Batman, it's and it's only if you go with some of the grimdark versions of Batman.
I would say you'd have to go, you'd have to dig deep into the dark, dark, dark recesses of Batman to get a good R-rated movie.
Oh, I don't know. The Grant Morrison, Dick Grayson, and Damian Wayne Batman and Robin run, that's some pretty dark stuff right there.
Honestly, an adaptation of the first four issues of Shadow of the Bat with Zsasz, the last son of Arkham.
Oh, anything with Zsasz in it would have to be R-rated.
It's
are
the
you
original,
kidding me?
It's the good Zsasz story. All the other Zsasz stories are kind of meh. The original, like, four-issue Zsasz story that introduced the character is some of the creepiest ass shit I've ever, and it's this, you know, Batman taking down a regular human serial killer. Like, it's just phenomenal, like, piece of storytelling. And that would have to be rated R if they ever made that into a film.
Well, I mean, and I don't think you're ever going to see it on the big screen, but you could probably do it as an animated, a DC animated.
It's okay.
Yeah, they're too busy doing Killing Joke. Don't worry.
God, I hate the Killing Joke.
So bad. So
God, I hate the Killing Joke.
So okay, we all
look,
agree that
even
that
the guy who Fox wrote the Killing Joke says the Killing Joke is bad.
But we all can agree that Fox is probably taking the wrong message away from Deadpool, making
of course
over 10 times its budget.
You know, speaking of people taking the wrong message, just to change tracks here to space, Battlestar Galactica. Battlestar Galactica had a very successful remake in the earlier 2000s where they took the lighthearted Star Wars ripoff and turned it into the dark, not Star Wars ripoff.
There are several people who would argue the remake is objectively a better show. I'm one of those people.
It is. And then there are the people who thought the ending was a cop-out, but really apparently never understood that it was still a remake of Battlestar Galactica, and that meant all the crap that was in the original that none of them knew about, like the whole Seraph. But, you know, the Battlestar Galactica series was a pretty good, you know, like, beginning, middle, end, story, finish, done, great. And so we were all, you know, those of us who liked the ending were really happy with it, and those who didn't like the ending were happy that it was over. Either way, not something we really need to see again, but Universal wants to go back to that well, and we talked about this way back in episode 19 of Nerd and
Time. I remember
Time.
We, God. Did we talk?
It was episode 19.
I remember that episode.
That Universal wants to remake Battlestar Galactica as a movie, and if you want to hear about all the reasons why I think it's terrible, go back to episode 19. It's just dumb. That's the summary. But if you want the full detailed reasons, I go over them back then. But the remake has gone silent for a while. You know, like, we haven't heard anything, and we thought the project had just fallen into development hell, and we'd never hear about it again. You know, like the Buffy remake. But no, it's back.
Of course it's back. It always comes back.
Apparently, Universal has hired Michael DeLuca, who worked on The Social Network and Moneyball, to spearhead the film as a producer. And we don't know if they're still using Jack Paglen's scripts, but that does exist if they want to. And apparently are determined to keep this monstrosity going. Why? Why?
I don't.
Why?
You know, it's not often that anything Battlestar Galactica related ends up being good. Like, Caprica wasn't bad.
Well, the remake of Battlestar Galactica was good.
It was good, and Caprica wasn't bad, but. But
it wasn't
how many
either,
times?
But
right.
Did any of you guys watch Blood and Chrome? Because that was an interesting thing. Whatever it was.
But how many times can you reboot something and then in an effort to try and?
Well, apparently they're trying a third. It's Like, okay, so
we're gonna get another reboot in like 15 years.
But this feels like a Galactica 1980 moment. Like, they just want to try to make money off it. Mm-hmm. It's so, for those of you who don't remember, after the original Battlestar Galactica aired, it got canceled. It ended. They brought back the show as Galactica 1980, in which they found Earth and arrived in 1980, hence the name. And
I laugh it, every time I think
but
about
it
this
ditched
shit.
All of like the original cast. It, most of the original cast, I think Starbuck shows up in one episode, and like, you know, I think Lauren Green might be in there somewhere. I can't remember. It's been a really long time since I watched Galactica 1980, but the show was on such a small budget, so they went out, you know, didn't have to film do everything with as much special effects because they were on Earth for, you know, a lot of it. It was terrible. Like, the Battlestar Galactica comics that tried to continue the original story ignored it. When the various reboot attempts that happened before, like when the original cast like was trying to like lobby a return to the series before it got remade at Sci-Fi, like their version of it would have ignored Galactica 1980. Like, it was so bad that people who love Battlestar Galactica just sort of pretended it didn't happen.
Mm-hmm.
But it was made because they saw popularity enough with the brand and wanted to try to make some money. That's what's going to happen this time, because I don't think any of the diehard Battlestar Galactica fans want a new version. We had our version.
Well, they're getting it.
We had an original version and we had a good version. We don't need a third. You know?
Pretty much.
You know? Indeed. I don't know. Do you guys have opinions on Battlestar Galactica?
You basically have hit what I think, Trey. I don't want another remake of Battlestar Galactica. I'm fine with the version that Sci-Fi Channel did. It's another one of those DVD sets that's within reach of where I'm sitting right now. Maybe I'll rewatch that, but I'm not really that keen on having it retold to me. It's like, eh.
What I loved was everybody who freaked out with the ending when they didn't explain what the effectively like the angel characters were.
I do have a thought.
That's straight out of the original series. There are literal angels in Battlestar Galactica. In the original Battlestar Galactica, there are straight up angels.
I do have one thought. I did not hate the ending of Battlestar Galactica in its entirety. I did hate the epilogue, specifically the line, the line of, today is the first day of the rest of your life, Liadama. And I just looked at the people I was watching it with, and I was like, were they trying to come up with Starbuck's last line? And they were like, just open up a Hallmark card or some crap. Hey, this show has gotten awards for writing, right? Screw it. It's the last episode. First day of the rest of your life. Okay, let's go drinking. There's no way that was not the conversation that was had on set when they wrote that god-awful piece of dialogue. Someone should have said, hey, that sounds really stupid. We shouldn't use that. But no one did.
Yet somehow, you're the first person I've ever heard complain about it, because everyone else complains about the angels, apparently not knowing that there were angels in Battlestar Galactica.
Angels didn't bother me. Didn't bother me. What bothered me was that stupid line, because people who have gotten awards for writing should be above writing trite crap like that.
You know, speaking of space opera with possibly better writing.
Oh, possibly better writing. Have you seen what we're going to talk about? Are you kidding me? This is going to be hopefully one of the best sci-fi shows ever. Of course, it's been known for quite a while that we are getting a new Star Trek TV series.
Yay.
On CBS, and then CBS's online thing.
It's all going to be on CBS All Access, with the first episode just randomly teased on broadcast television.
Yep. Mm-hmm. So that, aside from that horrible, awful thing, which I'm sure we'll touch on here in a minute, that's all happening in 2017. But we now have a showrunner for it, and it is literally one of my favorite human beings in the entire world doing this. Brian Fuller has been named as the showrunner of the new Star Trek series. Of course, Brian Fuller, known for genius masterworks like Dead Like Me, Pushing Daisies, Hannibal, the first season of Heroes when Heroes was actually good. And he is now taking on this new Star Trek series, which is not the first time he has worked on Star Trek. He wrote several episodes for Voyager and Deep Space Nine.
Yep, that's where he got to start.
Was writing for them. So they picked somebody that has had experience in Star Trek before, and somebody that loves Star Trek, and somebody that's probably one of the most creative minds on television right now.
Well, you know, Hannibal got canceled.
Well, see, the joke that I've been hearing about this is like, so we can expect two good seasons and then the show to get unceremoniously canceled.
That's a reasonable thing to assume.
Yeah, he wrote 22 episodes of Star Trek Voyager.
And they were all pretty good episodes, too.
I'm looking through these. Okay, so I'm
trying to remember which ones he wrote.
Friendship 1 was good. Workforce 1 and 2, Flesh and Blood.
Oh, that was a good one.
Haunting of Deck 12. He wrote the teleplay. Fury, Spirit Folk, One Small Step, Alice, Barge of the Dead. That's a weird one. Relativity, Juggernaut, Course Oblivion, Dark Frontier Part 1, Gravity, Bride of Chaotica, which is a phenomenal episode.
I love that episode.
Drone, Living Witness, Retrospect, Mortal Coil, and The Raven. And then on Deep Space Nine, he wrote the story behind the Empok Nor episode and The Darkness and the Light.
So he's got some good stuff behind him when it comes to his Star Trek filmography. So I don't know. Will this get me to buy the subscription to CBS's online service? Probably not.
It will get me to do it. Okay, I'm just going to admit it. Like, this plus Supergirl will get me to pay for CBS All Access. So, those together, like, because I do actually, I can get CBS over broadcast, but it's always such a pain to watch anything. It's literally the only channel I can get in my town is CBS. So I have access to Supergirl, but I really hate watching it live because I don't watch anything live because it's 2016 and I have the internet.
I don't mind watching it live, but I'm frustrated because due to play practice, I missed the Red Tornado episode.
Oh, it's so good.
And I freaking love Red Tornado.
So like, one show was not going to get me to pay like $8 a month for another service. But Star Trek and Supergirl.
Two shows could get you to do it. And who knows, maybe by then they'll have added more features, more material to that service. But I think it's weird that they're broadcasting it first on, I can get why they're doing it, but
this entire thing's a strategy to try to sell CBS All Access. That's really what it comes down to, is that nobody, honest to God, if I asked my parents about, streaming services, they'd come up with Hulu, they'd come up with Netflix, but they don't even know that CBS All Access exists. And they are Star Trek fans. My parents aren't nerds, but they are Star Trek fans, and they are Doctor Who fans. And they're going to be super annoyed, honestly, that this is going to be online only.
Well, what is this going to – like, we can probably talk about this on another think piece, and who knows, one of us – I might even try and tackle this. But, I mean, what's this going to mean for other channels and for other services? Because now you've got rumors that BBC is going to possibly start doing a pay service like this.
Well, it's not a rumor. That's why they took Doctor Who and various other shows off of streaming services. They're doing that.
What other networks, what other channels are going to start doing this, and how much – are they going to be expecting people to pay to be able to watch Star Trek or to watch Doctor Who or to watch any other show might show interest in?
I mean, for most of these networks have just agreements with Hulu and are using Hulu to do it. Like, you know, Fox, ABC, NBC, PBS. I don't know if PBS still has an active thing. PBS also has a free app on everything, so it doesn't really matter because they're PBS. But most of these, all the major broadcast networks except CBS are on Hulu. And they're all making money off of Hulu. And so I'm mostly just irritated that BBC America being a cable network,
maybe a little more leeway on that.
So what's irritating is that BBC America, we kept getting promises from Sling that they were going to add BBC America, and then that's been like the last year that they've been promising us that, because I've been a Sling customer since like the beta. I don't know, maybe it's still a beta. But they added all the other A&E networks, and we think that most of it's because of the amount of stuff that BBC America rebroadcasts with like the Next Generation reruns, that they'd have to black those out because of streaming rights. But like, I would actually pay for a BBC America subscription only because between Doctor Who and Orphan Black, there are enough shows on that, like, there are shows on that network that I want to watch. You know what I mean?
Right. Makes sense.
All right.
But Brian Fuller, this is exciting because we've all seen what good he can do and how creative and I said genius about him, but I do really think he's probably one of the smartest writers out there right now. He will be taking over as the showrunner. Well, will be the showrunner and co-creator of the new Star Trek series, debuting on CBS in 2017.
Yeah. All right. So let's move to something more local. All right. And folks at home, I am sorry for the audio quality of this episode. We're having some Skype issues, just bandwidth. So
Skype has just been weird tonight.
Both Fur and Nick are coming in a little fuzzy this episode, and it's not their fault. It's entirely the internet's fault. And so I apologize.
I blame the internet for a lot of things.
let's move on to the con scene. Now, we've been following the story of TCE2, the Titletown Comic and Entertainment Expo, for a while. We've had quite a bit of coverage, and we would like to officially now say, sadly, that it is a journey that, while long and tumultuous, has officially come to an end.
It's over.
It's gone.
We have,
they buried it.
We have confirmed with convention owner Denny Toll that TCE2 is officially, while originally meant to have, was going to try to hold their con in June, has canceled the event and will not be occurring this June either. Originally, they had tried to schedule a con in the fall and canceled it. And we reported a couple weeks ago that people were still waiting for refunds for this. Once the Facebook page was deleted, I started inquiring, trying to find out what was happening. Toll said he's trying to learn from his failure. And he wants to try to run a much smaller, more horror and paranormal themed event in either 2016 or 2017 under a different name and, you know, with a different focus, and try to go smaller. But it is not happening. Interestingly enough, though, the TCE2 website is still selling tickets.
Oops.
Okay.
So don't buy from that.
Don't do it.
Please don't.
Don't do this. This is a bad idea. Yeah, so it's it's disappointing in many levels that TCE2 failed, only because it would have been an independently owned and run comics event in Wisconsin, when right now really the only big comic event, there are some smaller one-day shows, but the only big one that exists is Wizard World Wisconsin, which is of course part of the big Wizard World network. But this would have been an independently owned and run one.
Could have been good, too.
On a focus that other cons aren't doing. And unfortunately, it looks like he aimed too big.
You got to start small.
He aimed too big, and he didn't talk to enough people in the... He didn't talk to enough people in the market right now. Like, he didn't reach out to, like, the Kitsune Con guys and ask for help and advice. He didn't, you know, who currently run a convention in Green Bay.
A wildly successful convention.
Yeah, it's so I think that that has a lot to do with it. I don't know if people are still waiting for refunds because, you know.
Last I heard, refunds were on their way out to artists and congoers. So.
Okay, so obviously if you haven't received any money, you know, tell us. But we, you know, as far as we know nothing about that topic beyond that we've heard word apparently that some people are getting refunds. So yay. But yeah,
it's too bad. Could have been a good show, but
it's disappointing.
Disappointing.
It's very disappointing. You know, Nick, I think there are other disappointments out there.
Oh boy,
geez. Yeah,
but on a completely different end of the spectrum. So KatsuCon was just recently
last weekend.
Just this last weekend, and let me tell you. Pictures, stories have gotten around on the internet that boil down to one basic idea. Hey guys, don't be dicks at the conventions you're at. KatsuCon, was home to, aside from what was probably a solid anime event, tons upon tons of con vandalism. Exit signs ripped out of the ceiling just hanging there. Holes made in doors and hotel rooms with someone having the gall to scrawl on the already vandalized door, One Punch Man was here.
It's spelled incorrectly throughout most of it, too.
Uh-huh. urine on the floor. Just the kind of stuff that shouldn't be happening at any event.
For anywhere, because we're all hopefully, like, fairly grown adults going to these events, and
not grown adults, you shouldn't be doing this.
Should
crap.
Know better than that.
Yeah, it's, and this is, you know, this is part of a larger problem, and this is not just limited to KatsuCon.
No, it's not.
KatsuCon just happened to have a well-documented example, but we're seeing.
Oh, absolutely.
But what's happening is the people are going to conventions and they are trashing the hotels. And I guess my question to these people is: do you like going to conventions?
Because
you're
not
going
to be able to. Much longer.
Yeah, you keep doing this to hotels and venues, and cons will, first off, if they don't, like, if the hotels don't kick them out, which, you know, is a whole other thing, we'll start jacking up the rates, which jacks up your ticket prices, which jacks up your hotel room prices. As, you know, when No Brand Con was in the Ramada years ago, when No Brand Con was in the Ramada, which doesn't exist anymore, I mean, there's a new hotel in its physical place, but the Ramada actually used to raise their rates for No Brand Con weekend because the amount of damage was happening to hotel rooms.
And, you know, here's the thing. I was a hotel liaison for a year for No Brand Con when they were at the Plaza here in Eau Claire. I, as a hotel liaison, got to hear about the damage. And you know what all I can do? I can only sit there and apologize profusely as I heard about smashed TVs, fixtures ripped out of hotel rooms, that kind of thing. Thankfully, we were not responsible for that year when they had to drain the pool because there was glass in the bottom of it. That was another event that had happened that wasn't con-related. But it sucks, and not only does it suck because it's going to raise your prices and you might end up getting the con kicked out of the hotel, you are also going to get charged for that because I heard about a TV that was absolutely wrecked. That person had about $1,000 added to their con bill to their own personal bill.
So.
They hit you for that shit.
It hurts when it's in your own hotel room, but it's going to hurt your own pocket. When it happens in common spaces, the convention's the one who's going to end up on the hook for that.
Everybody gets hurt by that.
And you know what? A larger conventions will tend to budget that in. Like, you know, if you go to ASEN, I'm pretty sure it has a contingency budget to deal with damages. But you go to a smaller con, like you go to GeekCon, or you go to KitsuneCon, you go to No Brand Con, and something major happens, and you risk bankrupting the event. It's because they can't always afford to pay for your things. Also, when you get to cons in smaller towns, when there are limited numbers of venues, if the people aren't willing to do business with the fan conventions, then conventions just go
Word
away.
Word gets around.
You know, yeah. It's Vomit Hat Steve was actually talking about how a convention he was working for in Nashville was having problems with their growth because they couldn't get any venues that were large enough for their current rate of growth to actually take their space, and so they have to split the event between multiple buildings, and it's all because the hotels that are large enough for them won't do business.
Don't want to do it, and I can't say I blame them. I wouldn't want to, as a hotel worker, I wouldn't want to have to deal with that.
So
that, they already have to deal with enough garbage, and to have to add that on top of that, that's awful. Seriously, if you are somebody that likes to go to cons, and you know, I'm looking at all that, I have to, you know, I mean, I myself enjoy going to conventions and having a drink or two, and having a good time with friends. But if that good time involves vandalizing hotel space, you need to get some help, y'all.
I do feel like there has been way too much of this attitude. There's this kind of dangerous attitude at cons these days that I've just been seeing more and more, which is this attitude of going into these cons as more of a party thing, and even worse, thinking that the rules of general decent society don't apply because you're at a con. That's not true. The rules are still there. You still have to be a decent person.
You know, I don't know how many conventions out there do or don't have raves. I don't know of any conventions, rather, that don't have raves, but I would really like to maybe see the numbers on damages between cons that run raves and cons that don't.
I don't think it's related.
I don't know if there's a correlation directly with raves.
You know, honestly, I've seen problems like this for a long time, actually. It's just that we're finally now getting
documentation of it.
But... And what happens is it's not every con has these problems and not every con scene has these problems. It's often localized to regions. And so it's all about the culture of the region. So it's important at your own conventions that if you see someone doing something, call them out on it. If you see something, report it. And if your friend is doing something, tell them to stop. It's important.
Take pictures and take video and show the right people because the con shouldn't have to pay for it.
But more importantly, if your friend's about to do something stupid, ask him not to. These are usually people who are in groups. It's not someone on their own. And it's often younger people who don't really, frankly, aren't always thinking about the consequences, but usually someone in the group might be. And so if your friend Bob is doing something dumb, stop Bob.
Exactly.
Tell Bob that it's not cool because, you know, peer pressure, it's useful.
The bottom line is don't trash con hotels because we like going to conventions and we would like to continue to go to conventions, and that can't happen if you keep doing that shit.
None of us can do mic drops because we're using mic stands. But that's, I think, where we would do it. So let's move to the mailbag.
Yeah, so we've got a few letters. Our first one comes from Langland, and its subject is Deadpool movie. And he writes, "Yo, hey, what's happening? So I checked out the Deadpool movie in Siren." Yes, that place again. I'm sure Trey has another tornado joke for that town.
The tornado took out the tornado siren in Siren.
Anyways, I really enjoyed the movie. The theater had one of the staffers dressed as Deadpool himself, and that person gave me a Valentine card with the Hulk on it. If you haven't seen the picture, you guys can see it on my Facebook. I love the movie. Ryan Reynolds was hilarious. His constant breaking of the fourth wall was excellently timed. I will admit some of the scenes made me cringe and perform a sympathy grab on my family jewels. I'm not going to read this next line because there's a lot of spoilers, and I'm not seeing the movie for another 30 minutes. The post-credit scene was also epic. So, yeah, I give this film a huge approval rating. I hope you guys liked it as much as I have. And if you haven't seen it yet, well, you guys need to go see it, and I mean it. Peace out, bros.
Side note,
Langland,
though, before you
sending us a spoiler-filled letter and then saying, I hope you guys see it soon.
Not really a spoiler but keep your eyes out because my favorite supporting character is in it. You'll smile. You'll smile when he's on screen.
Little tiny bit. And there's a Gail Simone reference, too.
As in a reference to something that Gail Simone wrote?
A reference to Gail Simone.
Okay. I was going to say, I'm sure there's multiple masturbation jokes in the movie, and...
You won't be disappointed.
What? You won't be. All right, so we're kind of pushing through here, so let's move on to the next letter in our mailbag. This came to us from Vincent Knight with the subject Events. Vincent writes, "The NECC is hosting their 5th annual cosplay picnic on the Commons, August 20th, 2016, the staff promote a safe, fun-filled event for all ages." That is the entirety of the letter. Now, I had to Google this a bit because we weren't told what... Because we like to promote people's events, so, you know, if you have an event you're running and you want us to mention that you're happening, we always kind of encourage you to send it to us. But in the future, if you do this, please tell us, like, the city and state that this is occurring in, because NECC can mean a couple of different things, including, I don't know, New England Comic Con, which this is not. Apparently, I did some Googling. It's not the North Essex Community College. It is, which is what I thought when I heard the word commons. But no, it's instead the New England Cosplay something, and it's in Boston, Massachusetts. They mean the Boston Commons. But let me tell you, people who don't live in Boston don't understand that that's what the commons means. The only reason I figured it out at all is because I literally had to search for the date, too, in Google. So, yeah, in the future, folks, we love promoting your events, but please make sure to tell us where they are. Oh.
Thanks, guys. All right, we got one more letter in our illustrious mailbag from Archimize. And the subject is no taxation without taxes. Hey, three nerds with three ties. I need to start out by saying Deadpool was really fun. It's neat to that he is one of the first to cross the Fox Marvel and Disney Marvel verses, which he kind of does, but not officially.
Yeah,
wink,
they're
witch,
jokes.
Nug, nug, say no more. Which is kind of how my favorite supporting character got to appear. But anyway, I'm also really psyched to hear about the Flash Supergirl crossover. Both shows continue to exceed expectations, though the Flash more so, and I'm really looking forward to the mashup. Also, since tis tax stable season, what anime, TV, movies do you enjoy that involve taxes? Are you fans of the class warfare scenario in Robin Hood Men in Tights? Or the socio-political ones like Spice and Wolf or Mao Yu?
Well, it's not my favorite, but I love the fact that the whole, like, first third of the Star Wars, The Phantom Menace, is based around, like, trade deals.
Tariffs.
Yeah.
Tariffs are taxes, man.
Yeah, like, that blew, like, I watching that movie when that came out in theaters as a small child, I had no idea what the hell was going on. Or what
watching that movie as an adult,
were,
I still have
like
no
that.
Idea what's going on.
But
I have a degree in political science, and I don't think George Lucas knew what was going on.
Oh, the AV Club did a huge article about how sketchy the whole, like, Galactic Senate setup is and that. Like, check it out if you can. But somebody went through it and is like, Star Wars has no idea how government works.
No. Naboo, which is in the Republic, is blockaded by the Trade Federation, who I presume are also part of the Republic.
They're not.
From the Republic. Oh, they're not?
No.
And Naboo is a monarchy, but they're also part of...
No, they're a constitutional monarchy. That's fine. That actually exists. Although they have elected queens and queens. That's just a dumb thing.
That's incredibly stupid.
Right. But you know.
Also, they elected
title.
A 14-year-old. What were they thinking?
Anyway, so it's not my favorite, but that's like the most notable one that sticks out
but
in my
Naboo,
brain.
Naboo was being blockaded by a foreign government, and the Republic wasn't sending in like. Like, it just wasn't an outright declaration of war.
I hate this movie so much. you know,
that's like if Russia blockaded Alabama. I'm not kidding. That is like if Russia
accurate,
blockaded
yep.
Alabama. I guess Hawaii, it would be physically possible. But it would still be like if Russia blockaded Hawaii.
I am going to say, if we're going to talk about taxation and media, in especially anime, I'm going to give a shout out to the anime series Martian Successor Nadesco, which is about basically if White Base from Gundam was a privately run spaceship, and they have an accountant on board who is like the second most important officer on the entire ship. And I think that's hilarious.
All right, so since I know Fern needs to go see Deadpool.
Yeah.
We're just going to jump straight to the Vomit Hat Steve Challenge, and if Fern wants to run away from the podcast, no one will be offended.
No, because I've got to take us out of it.
Oh, yeah. I guess, if that matters. All right, so moving on to the Vomit Hat Steve Challenge. The Vomit at Steve Challenge is a section in every episode in which I read a section of a book. And the challenge to you is to guess what book I'm reading. If you guess the book correctly, you get included in the Hall of Awesome. The benefits of the Hall of Awesome are as follows. 1, you get your name read aloud every episode. 2, you get your name on the website. 3, nothing else, you greedy bastard. This is a free game, and it's all for fun. The current members of the Hall of Awesome are as follows. Archimizer, Renian Sandy, Cheesy McDamage, Krista, Slithery Deke, Shameless Otaku, The Random Lamblings Man, Corfan, Capito, Chris Graham, Lilysaurus, Paper Godzilla, Cavsey, and the Minnesota Librarians.
Still the best one. Sorry.
Now, we've been reading from the same book every episode since the Minnesota Librarians guessed the last one. So, we're going to read a part of this book. And the line is as follows. The natural place to look was Asia. If you know what book that's from, go to nerdandtie.com/contact and tell us, or while you're there, tell us anything else that happens to go into your mind, out of your mind, in your mind, behind your mind, with your mind, behind other, left hand, right hand, up, down, start.
Yes. You literally send us anything. We enjoy getting mail and whatnot. Well, gentlemen, this has been another wonderful fortnight over here at Nerd and Tie. Of course, every fortnight you can hear us here. Every other fortnight you can hear Trey on the off week. And every other fortnight you can hear myself on Music Study Hall. And be sure to check those out, as well as nerdandtie.com for all your nerd news updates. Until next fortnight, I'm Firsters.
I'm Trey Dorn.
And I'm Nick Izumi.
And remember, you can subscribe to us both on iTunes and Stitcher. Rate and review us in those stores. Also, whenever Google Play gets around to rolling out their podcast app, which might be on your phone already, you can get to us there, too.
Keep Have a wonderful fortnight.
In the free world.
Also, subscribe to us on YouTube. Because that's
I'm
going to
go see Deadpool now. Bye.
Go see Deadpool.